Did you know the second Tuesday of every month, our patron community gathers together online for an artist check-in? Our artist check-ins are a time when we gather together to share our wins, our inspirations, our challenges, and any knowledge we've acquired over the month. As we've been exploring the role of community in the life of the artist this season, I wanted to put this into practice in a tangible way. If you're in need of connecting with other artists who share the creative journey and understand your struggles and who want to celebrate your wins alongside of you, this is a great place to start. Visit patreon.com/makersandmystics or see the show notes of this episode.
Seeing people trying to go back into community, it's not only important and beautiful, but I think it's essential, especially for the faithful creative, because we aren't made to be alone.
Kimberly Finney is a professor, counselor, poet, and writer. She's been published in Ecstasis Magazine, Fathom, Humana Obscura, and many other publications. She's the editor and founder of the literary community, The Way Back to Ourselves. Earlier this year, Kimberly's poem, An Ode to Hard, Dark Nights, won the Audience Choice Award in our Bright Wings Poetry Contest in partnership with Ecstasis Magazine. In this episode, Kimberly shares how the vision for her creative community and her recent book of poems, Of Wings and Dirt, were born out of her journey through an intense season of illness. As a community leader, Kimberly shares her thoughts on how artists and creatives can move against the modern bent toward isolation and disembodiment. I'm your host, Stephen Roach, and this is Season 13, Episode 11, A Brutal Love. Kimberly, thank you for joining me today on the Makers and Mystics podcast. What an honor it is to have you on the show.
I am absolutely thrilled to be here. You're probably going to hear me smiling through anything that we say today. I love Makers and Mystics. I love what you're doing. And I absolutely love your theme, Stephen, this season for community. So happy to be here.
Yes. Well, I can't wait to get into a discussion with you about that theme. And thank you. I appreciate you as a listener, also as a poet, as a community leader, all the things that you're doing. Why don't we start with that community leader part of who you are? Talk to me about how that developed in your life and the ins and outs of what that means for you.
Ooh, what a great question to start. So I am an accidental, you know, if you look at my resume, community leader and the way that things have happened. But nothing is an accident with God. And I can't tell the story of community without kind of giving the backdrop or the tapestry of what was going on in my personal life that made everything change dramatically in the past couple of years. I went into teaching. I have a public servant heart. I come from a line of teachers and writers and communicators. And so I taught English in a traditional setting for almost 20 years. Worked with inner city at-risk students mostly, and then I ended up going to a private school to teach. And I am a kind of bloom where you're planted girl. So I just imagined this is something I would be doing more or less for the rest of my life. I felt completely called to it. But in 2020, during COVID, when the world was shutting down, I've said my body started to shut down too. And we found out that I had an aggressive, very aggressive stage 4 endometriosis, which was attacking all of my abdominal organs, attaching them, and making it impossible for me to function and to walk. And to, in long story short, to keep a traditional job. So I had 4 surgeries, I've endured sepsis, I've been put into my wheelchair 3 different times. Right now, praise God, I am in remission. I had a 4th surgery about 5 months ago, and I'm up and walking again and doing well. So it's a journey, but definitely every month that goes by, I see some gains. So what that means as far as how did I become a community leader is that when I had sepsis, I was actually really delirious. And I kept on seeing the Blue Ridge Mountains coming back in my dreams. And North Carolina is in my heart. My parents lived there for a long time. I kind of see myself as a part-time resident, even though I live here in Florida. And I kept having these visions, and I was praying, there's got to be a way back, Lord, because I'm here. My body is just falling apart. My life is falling apart. I'm a new mom. When I first got ill, my daughter, I think, was two and a half. And she was a miracle baby. And I'm thinking, how is it that, you know, I believed in, I think, the Holy Unhappiness book that Amanda just came out with. I think I was holding on to that idea that if I'm good, if I make the right choices, if I love the Lord, if I stay in the boxes, that things are going to be okay. That theology of that it will be all right. Like, I will be happy. I will be okay. And everything was falling apart. And kept on having these images of Blue Ridge Mountain. And I said, there's got to be a way back. And I also, at the exact same time, was having unbelievable grief for our culture, for our world, through COVID and seeing the division and seeing people suffering in a whole host of ways. And that's where the seed for the way back to ourselves was planted. And of course, it seems crazy that you're having, you know, you're fighting for your life. And I'm thinking, man, if I can get on the other side of this, this is something I would want to do. And fast forward a year later, and I had recovered. I was no longer in a critical state. I got COVID and was bedridden again in between surgeries. And I said to my husband, you know what? That the way back to ourselves thing that I've been kind of chewing on, this vision I've been having, I'm going to make a website. I'm going to make a little blog. Maybe 50 people will read it, you know. It'll be nice. It'll be something good for the soul. And so now we have a blog that people contribute to. We have a podcast. We get to talk to great people. We have a literary journal we just launched, the Renaissance Literary Journal. We have an artist collective, and we're having our first retreat right here in Winston-Salem in North Carolina this June. So that is how it happened. It's a very quick version.
What an incredible journey just to hear you recount everything you went through. And first, man, I'm so sorry you've faced all of that.
Thank you.
I'd be curious to know, what role did community play in your own recovery process? And what role has community played in your own healing process? Has the way back to ourselves been a strategic element in your healing? How did community play into that?
Oh my gosh, that is such a wonderful question. And it was my saving grace. And because we're made for community, you know, we're not supposed to be lonely. We're not supposed to try to do this on our own. And we're not supposed to operate in isolation. And so community came in many ways, right? There was the community within my home and my church, and even some wonderful colleagues that came around me. And so in the flesh community, you know, there was great loss. I lost a lot of things. A lot of people walk away, but there are also people who come around you and say, you know, I love you just because, and I believe you, and I want to be here for you. And so that was unbelievable for me to realize for the first time in my life, as being like a perfectionistic person who felt I had to perform to be loved and to be validated. And I understood that through my faith, like, God's gonna love me or be more happy with me when I'm checking all the boxes. And I even saw that went out to my relationships. So I learned something brand new about myself and about faith and community, that we are all just broken creatures. And as the way back to ourselves grew, it became a place where I could forget about my illness, lose myself in the work, caring for other people, even if I was bedridden, you know, because I needed to have that purpose. And so my classroom that I was losing, room 925, you know, and I'm thinking, I'm losing these kids that I'm teaching, I'm losing a teaching career. And yes, I still grieve that. But it's amazing how God brings forth beauty from ashes. And when we're in community, we can lose ourselves to the beauty of community, and we forget about the ashes. And to be a part of something like the way back to ourselves, where it's not about me, and that's what I love. It's about this living, breathing entity of people choosing, people coming together on a virtual or digital platform, but also to face-to-face now and showing up for each other is just, it's been so powerful. And through this, Andre Nguyen, I hope I'm saying his name correctly, but he's amazing. You know, he wrote The Inner Voice of Love, which was very healing to me when I was in my darkest, and now The Wounded Healer, which you can turn toward others.
Yes.
And so I think what's been really beautiful in my personal transformation and then what The Way Back to Ourselves is doing, and in the writing too of Wings and Dirt, is not showing up and saying, hey, we're perfect, we have it together, but we're all the walking wounded. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we can be wounded healers. We can be in this together. And wasn't Christ the wounded healer? So it's a beautiful thing.
Well, you mentioned of Wings and Dirt, which is the new collection of poems that you've just published. Talk to me about how that plays into everything you're doing.
So at the same time, over the past couple of years, and actually it's so poetic to talk to you during National Poetry Month, but also 2 years ago in April, I wrote my first poem for Of Wings and Dirt, which I'd never set out to write a book. I was so sick. I set out to survive. That's what that poetry was about. And I've said love, faith, and poetry has kept me alive. The love of my daughter, my husband, my community, my mother, my friends. Even when you don't want to keep going, I looked at their faces and I said, I have to for them. And then the poetry is what bled out of me to make it through dark nights, right? But also the desperation to find wonder, to keep going, like these little kernels of wonder, you know, especially if I spent the whole day bedridden and then my family would be able to get me out in the cool of day for a little bit because it gets really hot in Florida. It's not easy to be sick in Florida. And they might sit me in my garden and it could have just been because a butterfly landed on a flower. And that's what got me through that day. And that's where a lot of the poetry came from with Of Wings and Dirt, was my desperation to stay alive, to find God in it, to lament and to hold space for that in myself. And then I had a precious former student of mine tell me, Ms. Finney, you need to start writing again. She goes to my church and you need to take a chance on this as you're getting better. And so she was really the one to inspire me, which I love. You know, another community moment where the very people that you've been pouring into for years, they see you and they want to pour back into you. And I think that that was the seed that was planted. And then it was April 2 years ago right now when I was out in my garden, and it was like an iceberg cracked over the back of my head, and it was God. And I was, first the garden looked terrible like me because I hadn't been in it in a while. And I was very weak. I did not last long. But as I was pruning away these horrible-looking flowers, the roses, the gardenias, I mean, they just were a mess. I had to be brutal to them. I had to rip off their heads. I had to pull the weeds out. And it looks like a mess. And that's when I felt God move in me. And that was that iceberg crack over my head. And he was like, see? See? And I'm starting to get emotional. I just started bawling my eyes out because it was a total, I felt the earth shift beneath my feet. And I went inside. I can't say I ran inside because I'm not running these days, but I moved as fast as I could. And I went inside, and A Brutal Love, which is the very first poem in that book of Wings and Dirt, poured out of me in 2 minutes, word for word, and I never touched it again.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was the start of it.
Would you be willing to read that poem for us today?
Oh my gosh, it would be an honor. A Brutal Love. In my garden, mid-bloom, I take the shears and cut them to their knuckles. Breaking their necks, the petals shed like blood on the sodden earth. I stand over them. I am brutal to the roses, to the daylilies and daisies, to the gardenias, I am brutal and unyielding. Their burnt offerings, white ash, like a death before me in the dirt. But I know better. Oh, it is a brutal love that birthed the universe, demanded Isaac, offered Job, and required the cross. His is a brutal love, ancient and unyielding, perennial and unchanging. Oh, it is a brutal love that sheared me mid-bloom, that allowed for winter days of barren grief, a dark night of the soul like a death before me. But he knew better. In his garden there is a severe mercy in his pruning, a brutal love falling down like rain. And in his season there is a humming from the earth, a green bud unfurled, and he is standing over me.
It's so interesting how beauty can come out of the dark places. It's such a mystery how poetry can be born of suffering. It's such a mystery how wonder can come from moments where we can't even get up to walk across the room. I'd love to know from you, how does community impact your creative process, and how does community impact reaching for wonder while going through a place of suffering?
So, how does community pour into us, right, to create more creativity, to create more meaning, and to create more wonder? Right away, you made me think of Julia Cameron from The Artist's Way and of the idea of filling the well. And in one of my writing courses that I have on my website, I'm very inspired by her. That book really saved my creative soul. And I said, you write until you can't write anymore, or you read until you can't read anymore, or you create until you can't create anymore, and then you go back to the reading and to the giving and to the living. And to me, it's this beautiful cyclical loop that when I feel like I'm out of steam, where my well is dry, and I can't pour anything out of it, whether that's my art or my own spirit even, or the gifts or talents that I want to offer to others, it's time for me to go back into that incubation period, or it's time for me to go back out and to connect or to serve. And in doing that, you get to be on this beautiful cycle where you go out, you live, you connect, you give, you serve. And that ends up pouring right back into your well. And then you, from that well, creates the art. It creates the inspiration. And then when that, in the writing or the painting or the dancing or whatever it is that God's given you to do, whatever song he's put in your heart or your lips to sing, when we go on that nice, beautiful loop in community, I'm experiencing that for myself. And I have to tell you, Stephen, the crazy thing about all of this, I'm 41 now, and even though I've always been in community, I was doing it as a public servant, and I leaned on my academia, and I leaned on the teaching side. But my artist self was starved because for whatever reason, I thought that, well, art is something that you do in isolation. Mm-hmm. My poetry, my writing, my painting, I sing on my guitar, I play on my guitar. All of those things I just thought, well, I keep those to me. I was afraid to share them. I didn't understand how important it was for me to be in a community with other artists. And now for the first time in my life, I am in that actively. And I feel as if I've had a rebirth. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just now figuring this out. Like, how desperate we need a community, and specifically the one that we've been fashioned for. Yes. I bet you doctors need to be in community with other doctors. Pastors probably need to be in community with other spiritual leaders and pastors. But we artist folk, some of us, we march to the beat of our own drums sometimes. And I know I make people scratch their heads. And then I listen to you and I'm like, ah, He makes people scratch their heads. And I love it because that's the community that I need to be in as an artist.
It's so true, and it's such an interesting path because there is this part of solitude that comes with the creative process, but I've made careful study to differentiate between solitude and isolation. And I think solitude is where we gain the inner health to be able to pour back out to the community. So even in solitude, it's a posture toward the other, whereas isolation is a pulling away from the other. And so that's a distinction that I've always made. But it's really interesting what you're saying, you know, how creativity and community work together and how they're made for one another. And I find that to be so true because otherwise it's a song sung to an empty theater. And I think I said it maybe in the book Naming the Animals, but all art is communicative. All art goes out. The moment that we release it, it becomes a social entity with a life of its own. And I know, of course, that sure, we make lots of art that may not ever see the light of day. It might not be for that purpose. It may just be us learning the process. But even our learning the process in solitude is so that we can present something that nourishes the community. And then thinking how the community feeds back into the artist. You know this, we just recently had our first fully live Breath and Clay event since before COVID. And I'm telling you what, just to be in that environment with hundreds of other artists that came together from all over the world, it fed my creative spirit more than anything that I can even point to in recent times. Just coming together, collaborating. I think that's the beauty of community, is whereas we may have one small perspective, but when we submit it to the community, we begin to see this diamond-like facet that even our own work has a life much greater than our own understanding, that even the art that we make goes so far beyond even our initial vision.
One little kernel that you made me think about, or a little thought trail as I was trying to be present and listen to you, but I think I want to talk about how disembodied we are right now.
Yes.
And how we've fallen into the patterns of isolation, which, like you said, is really different than solitude. And we're not meant to be in this disembodied space. And I guess what I could say, what I mean by that is, when people are talking over the internet, whether it's social media or TikTok, or even as we watch news, it's disembodied because you're only getting snippets. You're hearing a voice. You don't see a face. You don't see a body. You don't know the story connected to that. And this is making my heart so grieved because it forces us into those enclaves. And that's where you start to see the tribalism, and you can kind of see a tug at the tapestry of what used to be brotherhood and connection. And of course, COVID really just threw a bomb into what was already there and made it more difficult and painful. But seeing the breath in the clay, seeing retreats coming back, seeing people trying to go back into community, it's not only important and beautiful, but I think it's essential, especially for the faithful creative, because we, like I said before, we aren't made to be alone. So I am not at all surprised to hear you say that going back to your baby, you know, being able to put this on and to have that Beauty from Ashes moment, to be in that space with all of those people coming together, I'm not shocked at all to say and hear you say that this just filled your heart and your spirit and filled your well, and it'll probably will for months to come.
Yes, absolutely. You know, this idea of disembodiment, I think, is such an important discussion as we're talking about community and culture on this season of the podcast. And it made me think of how incarnational art is and how incarnational, you know, and how embodied even the faith is, you know, for those followers of Jesus. It's all about the word becoming flesh. It's all about the invisible becoming visible. It's all about the intangible becoming something we can touch and hold on to. And I think that disembodiment really is anti-human and anti-Christ even. And I think that, you know, the work of the artist in community really does lend itself to forgive the analogy again, but growing that garden of love. You know, it really, the artist in community really does create a bit of the invisible here in the visible.
Absolutely. And it says, in the beginning was the word. So one thing is God wanted to give us the word, which is an act of art. The first thing he did was he created. That creation was made by love, not chaos, like all other religions, which to me is amazing. And then to send himself in a body, right? To split the veil, to send himself in a body. So everything in the Bible we can see is pointing toward that tangible love, that taking something supernatural and making it have flesh and bones, you know? And I can't remember. I read so much in my doctorate, and I want to give credit where credit is due. It's not mine, but I read that you don't have a body, you are a body. And how important it is for us not to be disembodied, not to be dysregulated, not to be isolated from the human experience within our bodies, within nature, within art, with each other. And I don't know, I'm going a little bit on a tangent, but it's just something really beautiful that I've been chewing on, and I know I'm probably going to go somewhere with it, but just those little kernels throughout scripture. And what you said is absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Well, one last question for you then, for us to end on. What would you say then, in light of your study, in light of everything that you're experiencing in your own community building and in your own art, what is one thing you could leave with our listeners today to help us on this journey of moving toward community within the arts, within faith, within this exploration of the human experience? Because I know, even in our community with the Breath and the Clay and Makers and Mystics, we're very decentralized and we're all over the world. Local community is a fickle thing for many of us these days, I think. And so in this disembodied world that it seems like we've inherited, what can we begin to do today to move against the disembodiment and to begin to heal and to flourish in our art and in our community?
Wow, another amazing question. I'm going to be listening back to this because maybe my dissertation will be answering that question. But here are a few things that I've learned, and I am still wounded, and I'm a walking wounded, and I'm still learning. But one, I think, for me is to be curious. I think that it's really important to be curious, because if we go into the world with paranoia, with judgment, fear of someone who's different, it's going to create these invisible walls, and we will find ourselves more isolated. And I think that it's better to have that open heart and be curious about things, because it will really surprise you if you see someone who's different or they say something that you're like, rather than leaning toward cancel culture and division it's time for me to take my stake in my claim, and just get curious. And that's the ecological framework. It's like, what story is this person trying to tell me? What have they been through? What are they experiencing that would make them think and feel that way? And to lean into that, then you actually can become connected with people. And I would always tell my students, because here in Tampa, it's a very international group of people. And when I worked in public school, my classrooms would be extremely diverse. Everything that you could think of in those 25 kids right there in that 50 minutes. And we would have a lot of infighting and stuff. And I said, we are going to make community. And that's what we're going to do first. And then I'll teach you English. And I would tell them, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to find this out this year. It's hard to hate someone up close. The more time you spend with somebody, you might not like certain things. You might not agree. But why are you so important? You know what I'm saying? That everything has to be according to you. So I think everything in our culture is telling us the opposite. So leaning into brotherhood, leaning into curiosity, leaning into community, I think is one maybe shift of a mindset. And then I feel like there are going to be tangible things that we need to start to evaluate as a people, individually and within the in real life community that we have, is asking yourself, what are my highest principles? And I know this sounds cliche, but when I find myself on my deathbed, when I find myself looking back, you know, and I'm in the twilight of my life, what do I want to be able to say I did? What do I want to be able to say I believed in? What experiences did I want to have? And I guarantee you, and I had to think about this because I was ill, you're not going to say, man, I wish I was more angry. I wish that I was more judgmental. I wish I worked way more. I wish that I didn't know my neighbors like I did. Like, none of these things. Oh, I wish I had watched more TV and Netflix. Gosh, if only. I think that we would pause for a second and go, no, I actually need to reorient my life in the here and now. So what are some gentle shifts that I could do to maybe watch a little less TV or be on social media if it agitates me a little bit less? Maybe I should turn off the news, because things that are newsworthy, a lot of time they're outliers. They're not going to sit there and tell us all the good things that are going on in the world. And so if we feel, and I think this is going back to listening to our bodies, that we don't have a body, we are one. And your body is always telling you things, that it's stressed, that it's angry, that it's lacking sleep. You want to listen to those things and answer the call. And if you are feeling loneliness, if you're feeling depression, if you're feeling isolation, that is your body telling you, like, I need sustenance. And so I would say to answer that call, to listen to it. And obviously a faith system is, to me, the bread and butter of all things. And so getting curious about that too.
Yes. Oh, so good, my friend. Thank you so much for sharing that. This has been a rich conversation, and I'm looking forward to introducing the way back to ourselves, to the Makers and Mystics community, and just champion the work that you're doing and just champion the resiliency in your own life. And I do just pray continued healing for you on your own journey through everything you've been through. And just thank you for continuing to create. And thank you for doing what you do. And then thank you for being on Makers and Mystics today.
I should say thank you, Stephen. This has been wonderful. I appreciate your thoughtfulness, and I appreciate being able to be here to share the story, talk about the way back to ourselves, and talk about Of Wings and Dirt. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Makers and Mystics podcast. This episode was produced by me, Stephen Roach, with music provided by Somewhere at Sea. Be sure to give us a follow on Instagram at Makers and Mystics, and leave us a kind review on Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to go deeper into these conversations, you can visit patreon.com/makersandmystics to join our creative collective. We'll see you again next week, and until then, keep creating. The world needs your art.